Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Cheryl.
Welcome. God, Monday morning. How are you?
Alhamdulillah, doing well. And yourself?
Alhamdulillah. God, Monday morning. Do we have Brother Fleming on?
Yes, I believe he is.
Let me see. Where is Brother Fleming? I see him. Let me unmute him. We can hear you, brother. How are you this morning?
Alaykum as-salam. Yeah, we're busy on Capitol Hill, you know, doing our advocacy, the 8th annual year doing this activity. We have about 500 people here from all over the country, and a lot of them are young people, alhamdulillah. So I'm so glad to see that. And so far we've visited about 3 congressional offices. We got 2 more this afternoon. The next one for me is at 2:00, so I have to leave out about 1:45 to get there on time, because it is a walk, as you know, Sister Cheryl, from one building to the other.
Oh, yeah.
In the land of our capital. It is an exercise and a half, you know, but I'm a lot of spirit is real high, and they asked me to make greetings to the group, you know, this morning. Very, very cooperative spirit, so I'm glad to be a part of it. Alhamdulillah.
Thank you. Yes, yes, yes. We have a fabulous show planned for everybody this morning, and we have some great guests talking about a topic that has been heavy on our minds. But before we dive into it, I wanted to make sure we can hit everybody up about what's been in the news. So,
This is Aisha in the process of calling in, so she'll be with us shortly.
Okay, perfect. And while we wait for her, let's just look at what's going on. And we just catch a break in some of our most in our biggest metropolitan areas, and I know here in the Bay, they just cannot get some act right. We just can't get act right. I mean, we have, I think it was last week we reported about this ring of young people who were arrested in conjunction with over three dozen crimes. The youngest is age 12, about to be teenagers. And these crime sprees that are happening all around the country, smash and grab, assault. And this particular group of young people were arrested, and then the DA said that she couldn't charge them because she can't prove, she doesn't have enough evidence to charge them. And it's causing a lot of angst in our communities right now because people want some kind of, you know, action. Well, if you know you're not going to get charged, you get a whole lot bolder, right? So what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? People are feeling really unsafe and harmed, and people who are doing the harm are feeling a lot bolder. What do we do? What do we do? I don't think the solution is to throw everybody in jail.
We have to strengthen what's going on in the families. We got to work towards restoring the moral base that used to exist at one time in our families, and also encourage members of our community to engage in entrepreneurial activities so that we're not dependent on handouts from people and special government programs that make a way for ourselves. And the adults who are responsible for corralling and influencing these teenagers, we need to rustle them out and charge them. We can't charge the youth. Definitely get the bad apple adults out of the way. That's one thing that we could possibly do.
And it all starts on a local level of influence to really make a big difference. Because each community is so different. I know there was an effort not too long ago to make some of these local counties or local cities what they call gun-safe communities, means Second Amendment communities, which is actually a cover for putting more guns into the community. So we really got to start on a very basic level and address, why do we have this proliferation of guns among so many young people in our community? What's the root cause of that? Because they're using this almost, oh, my God, like breathing. And it's every day some innocent child is being taken, sometimes, unfortunately, by another child or somewhere just in the childhood range. So we have to have a very specific action to address this proliferation of guns on a local level first. Now, you can always have these people come through to say, listen, you're infringing upon my Second Amendment rights. You can't pass an ordinance to limit my use of access to guns. But I'm afraid you can be limited. It's just a matter of having the will to do that and the political principle to take a stand on this, because I used to dying. We've gotten to the point now where gun violence in our communities is the number one killer. The number one killer among youth today is gun violence. You know, it's not disease. It's gun violence. So we got to really address what can we do to reduce the level of guns accessible to these youth. And as our sister said, you've got to incorporate some family responsibility. Now, If you can be charged with having your child out of school for 30 days and charged with truancy, if you're found guilty of really providing guns to these kids, and I know the cases I've been involved in personally where guys are coming to projects with a truckload of guns, sell them for these little kids for $10, $15, and make them, you know, they absorb them into their little gang activity because that becomes like family unit. And we've had kids, and I'll end with this, taken back to their homes, and the parents refuse to take the kids back because they say they can't do anything with them. Now, what do you think that does to the mind of an 11, 12, or 13-year-old child who's rejected by their parents? They'll be absorbed by any other group out there strong enough to, you know, entice them into whatever activity they think is proper because they offer them a sense of belongingness. So it's a tri-parent kind of thing we got to deal with. But it starts locally, and it starts in the household. And from there, it can emerge into some kind of ordinance locally and some enforcement, some real, real enforcement. I'm tired of people being stuffed in the back of the hand, and you have 17 people you've been charged with murder. And the, you know, the last most obvious case, that Unabomber, I mean, there were 17 people killed behind all of that. And he, all he got was a life sentence. Of course, he took his life at 81 years of age, but that's just an example of what the justice system is not doing when it comes to dealing with people who commit atrocious acts against the, you know, innocent communities. And I'll stop there because I know I've gone on too far. But thank you for the question. Good question. So sure to kick us off on this, you know, podcast from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this. I think that one of the things that we do get, you know, we have a lot of gun violence in our city. But I want to say this. Some of these crimes are not even, a lot of the crime is gun violence. But some of this crime is not gun violence. Some of it is smash and grab. Some of it is pushing people down and assaulting them.
Oh, yeah.
I watch a video of somebody, I mean, they are barreling into people like they're in a football game and knocking down, you know, 67, 80-year-old people and smashing it and smashing into them and grabbing their equipment. They just showed a video of someone driving by with some tech equipment trying to sense where their keys are, right? The woman showed that they now they have some high-tech equipment, and I want everybody to listen up online so you can hear this.
Mm-hmm.
They can sense if you have your keys anywhere close to your front door, move them. Move them. Put them upstairs. Put them inside your handbag, underneath your pillow, whatever. But do not keep them in proximity to your car, because now these people are driving by, and they can, and it's these cars like Toyota and Honda and Kia and even Tesla, right? These popular cars, they get the wave signal. And once they pick up on it, the little machine lets them pop your trunk. And they just showed the video on this. They pop the trunk and they're rummaging through it. One car drives in. They stay there. The driver stays there and the other one jumps out, rummage through your trunk, get what they want, and they close it. The reason it's hard is you don't even realize that your trunk's been rummaged through for a little while because they're not leaving any evidence. They broke in. There's no broken glass. And you realize it later. The lady realized it when she saw it on her video camera, her ring camera from her home, that someone did this. There's a whole new level of criminality. They're not busting windows like they were before. So, and then the other one is that they're going into people's lockers at the gym, or they're knocking you over when you're coming out of the grocery store, or knocking you inside your head when you're coming from the ATM. They're not even using weapons. And they just know that they can get away with it, running into the store, taking whatever they want, and running out while you're sitting there at the self-checkout, like you work there, paying for it. They just running in and running out. So some of it is gun violence, I agree. Some of it is just plain, I don't give a care. I'm going to take what I want. And ain't nobody going to stop me because I'm going to go in. I'm going to go to the court. And I know that even if I have to go to jail, I'm going to get out in 2 days. So, yes, I agree. We need to deal with guns. Yes, this is a masala. I agree. You have to deal with the home. But some of them, their parents ain't no good either. What you going to do with that? Some of them want to go to jail. That's where their family and friends are. This is a family reunion. Mm. what we do with that? Oh,
well,
I had cousins like that. Just gonna be honest with you. I got cousins who go to jail so they can get some sleep.
The human being can always be redeemed. The human being can always be redeemed, and we have excellent examples of that now. You know, Elhaj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, he was in jail for the life of Islam at through the Nation of Islam came to him, and then as he grew in knowledge, he came to the Quran, and so we did work harder than those of us who are engaged in power, and also those who go into the prisons to get the message of the Quran to all of our, to everyone, to humanity. So we know that our prayer is a mercy to all of humanity, and we can't give up hope. You know, that's what the Shaitan wants. We get so discouraged and, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that. But, you know, what Allah has decreed is what is going to come about. And so we just have to work hard. In the first, we used to say, I'm going to work out my salvation. So myself and all of us listening, whenever we do a good work, we would say, I got to work salvation. If I translate it in today's language that we use, that we want to put those good deeds on the scale so that the day of judgment, the day of deeds, the day of religion, that our good outweighs the bad. And we know that Allah judges us by our intention, but I think more good people, we have to stand up and take charge of our home first and our community and the state that we live in and the country that we're currently living in, which is the United States of America. We have to see that we have a share in all of this and a responsibility in all of this, and rechannel that negativity that so many people are engaged in today.
That's what I wanted to hear. I'm glad you say that. I wanted to ask that part right there, because so many of us sit back and throw our hands up and say there's none anything we can do, and that hopelessness is what has led to what we have right now. Eh? We retreat to our own corners and we say there's not much we can do, and we let this happen. Yes, we can be an example. And let me just ask you this. I do think that what's happening now is a direct result of that apathy, right? So when I was growing up, when I was younger, especially in the late 70s and the 80s, I remember my brothers who used to do things, and I used to watch them, and I used to watch what happened. If they took something from a store, a Hot Wheel or a pack of gum or whatever, my mother and my cousins, because they all used to hang out together, my grandmother, my aunts, my mother, they would march them right back into that store. Not only did you have to take whatever you took back, you had to pay for it, then you had to work it off. They used to be mad. Wait, I got to give it back, I got to pay for it, and I got to work. So it's like the punishment was three times, and you had to apologize. Right? Because that was the third part, the apology in front of everybody. So that embarrassment was there. You've got to give it back. You got to pay for it. And you got to work for this fourth owner. So I think it's missing in our current environment. There's no embarrassment. There's no restitution. And there's no sense of, now I got to work. So here's my idea. Are we breaking windows? Oh, you like to break windows. Oh, okay. We like to break windows. I'll tell you what we're going to do with you. I don't think the answer is always put everybody in jail because she's 12, 15-year-old, don't need to go to juvenile. Okay. But you like to break windows. I'll tell you what you're going to do. We're going to take you over here to this junkyard. They got 1,000 cars.
cars over here that they need to break down. You're going to break some windows. You're going to take your, go ahead and put your safety goggles on and get this sledgehammer. You're going to help this man break down these cars. You like breaking in cars, right? You're going to break some cars. Go ahead. We're going to put you to work. You're going to do something that is going to help the environment. Oh, you like taking catalytic converters off. They need some catalytic converters taken off of these broken down cars that we need to get out of out of the junkyard. Oh, and then you're going to come over here and we're going to take you over to this Ford factory, this Chevy factory or whatever, and we're going to learn how to put together a catalytic converter. Now you're going to learn a skill since you like taking stuff apart and put it in. So now we're going to take you over here. And then when you finish, you know that 60-year-old woman, that 50-year-old woman, that 25-year-old woman who needs her car to get her children to school or needs to get to her doctor's appointment, now you're going to spend the next 60, 120 days over here at the elderly home, and you're going to work for the next 60, 80, 90, 120 days cleaning bedpans, wiping butts, reading stories. You're going to go over here to this nursery school reading stories to little children. You're going to spend some time paying recompense to the people who you have harmed in a different way. And we're going to put this little monitor on your ankle. Make sure you do the time that you're supposed to do. That's how you pay them back. Make them learn a skill, but also make them give back to the people that they harmed. We ain't going to cut your fingers off like they do in, you know, Middle East or Africa, but we're going to take away your time. Because half of them want to go to juvenile, or maybe they get treated right there. They don't get treated right at home. That's what I do. That's me.
Well, listen, I would add to that, we almost need a community court to do what you just suggested, Sister Cheryl, in these communities, supported by, you know, specific support from the system, and let the community court make those decisions and have an enforcement component to do just what you suggested. I know we used to have community courts and community a long time ago. As we say in the first, we had a court system. And if you were charged for a certain, you know, moral issue, you were brought before the community. The rights were read to you, the violation read to you, and there was a consequence. And people got put out for 6 weeks for doing certain things, as we said at that time period. But we need a community effort on a local level to really address these issues. And I think Michael Jackson said it best, if you want to change the world, look at the man in the mirror, in this case, the human being in the mirror, because it sort of boils down to what are we going to do as an individual and as a collective to make a difference. And something can be done. The only reason crime explodes because good people are quiet. Crime
right,
only explodes as an absence of good people as a model.
Well,
you know,
that's
so
right.
We have
right.
to be present
not
also. We have to be present.
That's,
yeah,
that's
I
right.
can,
not just crime,
I can
but the
list
world.
A whole lot of things. Yes, yes,
that's
exactly.
Right. The world,
like I was just sharing with a group.
Changes. That's right. Let me take a real quick break, brother, and then
okay.
I see we got a bunch of people on, so I think that's our guest. But you're right. The world
right.
falls apart when good people are silent. Let's take a quick break, and then let's come back. And Sister Matla, let's introduce your guest. Well, let's take a real quick break. I'm watching the time.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarships, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay. Okay, we're back on air, sister. There we go. We're back live.
Okay.
Sister Matala, let's go.
Thank you. We have, as part of our panel, our beloved Sister Aisha K. Musa, who is the editor of the Muslim Journal. And she's been the editor for 34 years now. She's put in a lot of time with that effort with the newspaper. Just to give you some background on our dear sister, she is a graduate of Cornell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. She had with a BA degree, and she has a double major in psychology and political science and a master's degree from in journalism from Columbia College in Chicago, Illinois. Sister Aisha moved to Chicago in the mid-1975. She's originally from Mississippi. There in Chicago, she worked in many capacities assisting the efforts of Imam W.D. Muhammad. She also traveled as part of delegations led by Imam Muhammad several times to Saudi Arabia, going to Riyadh, Jeddah, and Mecca, to Jerusalem and the West Bank. That the most notable trip was the meeting between Imam Muhammad and the Palestinian president at the time, Yasser Arafat. Sister Aisha made Hajj in 1977 with the largest Muslim American group led by Imam Muhammad. She moved back to Jackson, Mississippi in 2011. She was the weekly editor of the Mississippi Link newspaper there, a weekly newspaper, and now she is serving as one of the contributing writers. Sister Aisha was named the Muslim Woman of the Year by the community of Imam Muhammad in 1994. There is a street in New Medina, Mississippi, which has been named in her honor at the New Medina 25th Annual Retreat in 2011. She is the mother of four, grandmother of five, and an advocate for foster parenting. And so we welcome Sister Aisha to the microphone. Assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Wa alaikum assalam. Doing fine, thank Allah, and thank you very much for having me.
Alhamdulillah. We're so glad that you're able to join us. During a discussion or a conversation that Brother Funye and myself were having about upcoming shows on Palestine, he mentioned that there were some brothers he could recall who had made that journey with Imam Muhammad. And a little light bulb went off in my head, and I said, well, Sister Aisha was on that, if I recall correctly, because I remember that Muslim Journal did a very good spread about that trip that the Imam had taken. So I'd like for you to share with our audience your impressions from that trip and the impact that that trip had on you and perhaps other people in the delegation.
Praise be to Allah. Imam W.D. Muhammad took a delegation with him to what we still call Palestine, the West Bank, parts of the Gaza Strip. 1996, and this was in December of that year, we actually ended up being in near Bethlehem during Christmas time of 1996. But, you know, the just getting to know firsthand the Palestinian people was eye-opening because, you know, how just like they paint us on the news, African-Americans as being violent. They paint us as being unproductive, criminalized, antisocial. And those are the kind of scenarios that you would take away if you just knew Palestinians through the news. That's all you would get. And good news usually is blocked out. But when we went to Palestine and met Palestinians, of course we had to go through Jerusalem, and we had to go through Israel, the airport in Israel, and that was a story in and of itself because we were treated as potential violent people going through the airport, that we were there for some nefarious reason, that we were sympathizing with terrorists. And just getting through the airport was a real ordeal. And so, but we went through that, and we finally had an opportunity. The sister who helped set up the trip for us is Layla Diab out of Chicago, her family's Palestinian, and other groups worked with us to form that delegation, and they wanted Imam Muhammad to meet with Yasser Arafat.
Yeah.
So first we meet the Palestinian people, and we learn that they are the most loving, most welcoming, most down-to-earth families and individuals, and they reminded me of home when I come home to Mississippi. Mississippi is a harsh environment, but when you get to know the people, you know, you fully understand what Southern hospitality is about. The Palestinian, meeting the Palestinians was like Southern hospitality. They invited you into their home. They wanted to make sure you were well-fed. Did you need anything else? Are you okay? Let's take you here. Let's take you there. I want to show you my family. I want to show you my photos. And I'm going to get back to the photos. But I had a down-home feeling and a complete readjustment of my understanding of the Palestinian people. That we don't get on the news. And even now today, you know, Israel has basically, in the territories that's still under Palestinian occupation, they have blown up all the media outlets, the buildings. I mean, literally bombed the buildings. Yeah. So Al Jazeera is not there. AP, Associated Press, all of them had to run for their lives to get out of the building that they were warned was going to be blown up in 30 minutes or an hour. And so we had the Palestinian sister who was a journalist, clearly with the vest mark, who was shot and killed. And that was her sole purpose, was reporting on Palestinian issues. So the news is limited. And even today, our news media, they would start out with unrest in Palestine against Israelis. Started again, and it's always from the perspective of the Israelis. It's never from the perspective of the Palestinians. But we learned about the hardships that they live under. When Imam Muhammad met with President Yasser Arafat, he explained how they have produce, they have resources at their fingertips, but the Israelis boycott them from getting their produce out to the market. They have beautiful flowers, beautiful bouquets, arrangements that they produce themselves, but they can't get them out to market. Even fishing rights out in the waters, there's limited fishing rights for Palestinians, even though they sit on the same water, but their fishing rights are limited, so they can't get that out to market. There's a stranglehold. Israelis control the water flow, the drinking water. They control the electricity. They cut it on and off when they feel like it. And then everybody wonders, what are the Palestinians mad about? You know, just like they ask those Africans, what you mad about? But nobody ever sits back to explain, this is what happens in the dark, in case you didn't see it. So when Imam Muhammad, after meeting with President Arafat, when he came back to the States, he was very pro-Israeli. I'm sorry, I apologize. He was very pro-Palestinian, even to the fact that he said if he had been a younger man, if he were a younger man, he would fight on behalf of the Palestinians. He literally said that. And some news media picked it up, but of course, the other type of treatment you get from the media is just to silence you, you know, not to report what you say, not to cover you. It's just to ignore you. And that was some of their responses, basically, from that monumental trip. But it was one of my best eye-opening opportunities traveling with Imam Muhammad. And another thing, was reiterated was before the establishment of this Israel, the Palestinians, Muslims, and Jews had a peaceful cohabitation. There was no conflict between them. The families commingle, the activities commingle. Bethlehem is under Palestinian rule, and the visitors every year to Bethlehem for religious reasons was not inhibited. All of the Christian shrines and locations for pilgrimage were always open. There were no conflicts between the three religious groups before the establishment of Israel.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that you want to get back to the photos. When you were talking.
I was going to get back to...
the pictures or the photos. I think it was something that had to do with the trip.
Okay, yeah. I got to find my note. I got to come back to it. Let me find my note again. I talked myself out of it.
That's okay. But you did mention that back in...
Sister Elijah.
Yes.
I remember now what stood out about the photos. When we were going into the Palestinian homes, the solemnness was that nearly in every Palestinian home, there was a photo on the wall of a young man, a young woman who had died in one of the intifadas, who had died in conflict with Israel. And it was just a solemn idea that they were losing their young people in these struggles, and nearly every household had been touched. It was very few exceptions. But to see those young people's photos enshrined and on the walls of those families, it reminded me of how much they have sacrificed and the impact that that's having on young people, on the young Palestinians. It cannot be understated. When you're living under those kind of conditions, you're going to have an impact on those young people.
Yes. And you see the young people out there in the street trying to fight as best that they can against the oppression that they're suffering. You mentioned our sister, and I don't know if a lot of people really get this point. The journalist who was killed, she worked for Al Jazeera, Shireen Abu al-Akla.
Yes, ma'am.
She's a Christian sister, but she had been covering Palestine for 25 years or more.
Yes, ma'am.
She was an American citizen. So our government tolerated an American citizen being killed by Israeli military forces. And from the research that I've done, I've found that from 2000 to 2022, 45 journalists have been killed. The bulk of them Palestinian, but usually we see, sometimes we might see on the news, and just take the Ukraine war, for example, now. If you look at CNN or MSNBC, they'll have a correspondent who is reporting from some city in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the journalist, like you said, the sister was wearing a vest that clearly identifies the person as a journalist. Her back mm-hmm. to the Israeli forces mm-hmm. as she was reporting. And she was shot from behind, and it was a sniper mm-hmm. shot.
A sniper
and
shot.
A sniper shot killed her. I believe her photographer was hit also. He did not die, but she mm-hmm. was killed almost instantly. And if mm-hmm. anyone followed that situation, when they had her funeral at a church and the crowds of people, because she was loved by the Palestinian people, Muslim, Christian, non-believer, whatever, the people loved her because of the good work that she had been doing. When it came to her funeral, the Israeli forces even came to the church grounds, and they claimed that they were trying to establish order so that the procession wouldn't get disorderly, that they were afraid that there would be rioting. They almost tipped over that woman's coffin as the pallbearers were trying to mm-hmm. get the coffin into the hearse. People saw that, you know. But still, mm-hmm. our government, there have been calls for our government to press and to join the UN in demanding further investigation and accountability for those people responsible for her death. And our government has not pressed forward. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, the Secretary of State, none of them have pressed forward to get justice for this sister. And our taxpayer dollars goes in the form of military aid to Israel, $500 million a year. For the next,
Sister Elijah, I think it's like $4 billion. Up to $4 billion.
The military aid, as far as weapons, $500 million. That's in addition. You're right, to the 3.8 Israel gets in aid from our taxpayer dollars. So, I think that if more people knew the facts about what's going on with Israel and our support of the Israeli government, there would be more, I would hope, more activism to curb the type of support we've been giving to Israel financially through our taxpayer dollars, but also not supporting UN resolutions, because Israel has more UN resolutions condemning Israel than any other country of the countries of the world. And most people probably don't even know that, unfortunately. But we have a lot to cover on this, in this area. You as a journalist, what is the impact of you knowing that 45 of your international colleagues have been killed? Now, that was back in 2022, and there was just an incident last week where a 22-year-old was hospitalized, a journalist, again shot. He was struck by rubber-coated steel bullets as he documented Israeli troops demolitioning an apartment building. Now, the apartment building that they were tearing down was the home of the family of a man who allegedly carried out a bombing attack in Jerusalem last November. The Israelis say that, their officials say, this was collective punishment
mm-hmm.
for that bombing attack. Now, collective mm-hmm. punishment is a war crime. Internationally, collective punishment is a war crime. In other words, if there's someone who committed a crime, let's bring it back to Fleming mentioned earlier about the Unabomber. when they caught the Unabomber and they prosecuted him. Now, if they put him in jail and then they tore down the home of his brothers and his sisters and his parents, that would be collective punishment. That would be a war crime. But yet and still we tolerate Israel carrying out these war crimes against the Palestinian people who are not armed to the same degree that the Israelis are by our money. So as a journalist, I'll get off my soapbox. As a journalist in America, Muslim Journal editor, what is the impact on you personally when you hear of these journalists in Palestine who are routinely killed by the occupying forces?
Well, as a journalist, it makes me realize that the profession of journalism, the responsibilities of the media, are no small measures, and it's something that we should really take to heart. And then we can understand why it is actually protected in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of the United States. You know, in the Bill of Rights, they give us our freedoms, our first freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom to redress the government when we are offended. All of these rights that are given in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, the freedom of religion and the rights to a free press are in the same sentence. It's a long sentence that's broke up with semicolons, but it's the same sentence. And if you look through history, where there has been conflict, it has been the role of the press to bring back the news. And even the Vietnam War did not come to an end because of politicians. It came to an end because the media began to report that we are not winning the war. And when the media began to bring back the news that America is not winning this war, then the politicians followed up with, we need to bring our boys home. The Society of Professional Journalists. The Society of Professional Journalists.
I'm sorry. And when the media started showing the pictures of the coffins and the body bags coming back with American soldiers, that put more pressure on the politicians also. So the photojournalism is important too. I'm sorry to interrupt your thought, but I that was a real critical point that you reminded me of. So you go right ahead, Aisha.
Yes, I was just going to say, that was Walter Cronkite, who came back and broadcast that Americans are losing this war. And his assessment is that you're not going to be able to win it. And that was when they began to bring the American soldiers home from Vietnam. If the media lives up to its tenets and its responsibilities that are outlined, the Society of Professional Journalists still outlines the responsibility of the media, basically not to take sides but to report the news. And if you reported the news, you will realize that the Palestinians are unjustly targeted. And then you just go through the scenario of events. President Jimmy Carter, the late President Jimmy Carter, called Israel an apartheid state. And he said, after he made that statement, people started calling him a liar. They started berating him. He said, I had never been called a liar my entire life until I said Israel is operating as an apartheid state. And now today, there's so much leniency given to Israel that you don't have the right, even as an American, to boycott a Israeli product. If you are interested about their behavior, you don't have the right to boycott.
Yeah,
You will be called anti-Semitic, and you're working against the good. You, I'm the bad person. We use boycott in the South during the Civil Rights era all the time. We boycott stores. The Montgomery bus boycott was what brought white citizens to their knees to realize we need these people after all. Maybe we should treat them better. But we don't have the right to boycott the products coming out of Israel to protest their treatment of Palestinians. We'll be called anti-Semitic. And that's strange. I'm boycotting a government And you want me to say that that's anti-Semitic. And then the government says that it is a democratic government, but you don't have the right to protest your government's behavior. It's just a strange phenomenon, and the Palestinians live on it. And even now, when they started barring and subduing the press, now everybody got a cell phone and stuff gets out whether they like it or not, just like during Ramadan when the Israeli forces went into Al-Aqsa Mosque and started beating the worshipers there, and somebody put it on a cell phone and it went worldwide. But our press wouldn't even report that. It was as if, but you didn't see the whole story. What else did you need to see? Why were they in there? Why were they in the mosque?
Yes.
During Ramadan.
And would you have blocked out the story if they had gone into a Catholic church? If they had gone into the Vatican beating on Christmas Eve or on Good Saturday? Would American press have said, well, what is all that about, or would they have blocked out the story? That's very true. I think that the point that you just made as far as how technology has helped at least to get more of the story of what's going on in Palestine out is very, very critical. I've been very bothered by the last two Ramadans, and I don't know if people have brought this connection to their conscious mind. The last two Ramadans, the Israeli officials have been provocateurs in coming there to Al-Quds and invading actually the sanctity of the masjid there and brutalizing, like you said, the worshipers during this time of fasting. They've done this for the last 2 years, and this seems to be a regular routine because they're trying to provoke the Palestinians so that they can come against them and take more of East Jerusalem under their control, the Zionist control, the Zionist government control, where Al-Quds has been under the authority of the Palestinians, are the legal custodians of Al-Quds. And that is one of the holy sites for us as Muslims, coming after the Kaaba, the Prophet's Masjid in Medina, and then Al-Quds. And a lot of times people, when they make Hajj, they will visit these three sites if, like you said, if they can get in from the Israeli authorities, very strict in limiting the traveling back and forth of Muslims in and out of Jerusalem. So we probably need to break right here for a PSA and show. And Brother Fleming, if you have any comments or questions for Sister Aisha, maybe we can come back after our break and get to those questions. Does that sound good, Joe?
Sounds good.
Thank you, madam.
Okay.
Madam, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you, and have a pleasant day.
Assalamu alaikum, this is Martha Nyla Abdullah, Executive Director for CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference. With God's name, the Merciful Benefactor, the Merciful Redeemer. We are openly acknowledging that God is one, that there are absolutely no partners with God, and that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, is a servant and messenger of the one God. Through his example, we are able to live in this time, 450 years beyond the time of enslavement here in the United States of America. Proactively and from the mercy of the Almighty, we stand with the human family that Juneteenth is a reminder of what once was and how we can take a stand and be a contributing factor to the human family for the best of humanity, continuing to strive with the excellence that our foreparents stood with and for, many who lost their lives because they chose not to be subdued and treated inhumanely. Juneteenth, again, is as a soul arising by the mercy of the one God. And now, welcome, dear human family, to Juneteenth 2021.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Mikhail Ukda, Assistant Imam of Masjid Al-Halim, New Medina, Mississippi, asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP 5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
All right, sister, we are back live. Thank you so much. On live.
This is Aisha. I'm here.
I'm sorry, I had you. I had hold on. Sister Cheryl, did you have another point before I do a follow-up with Sister Aisha?
Go ahead. I think Brother is on. Let me take him off the hold. I had him on hold.
Yeah, I've got to get off the meeting, unfortunately. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Aisha. Listen, I want to just greet you. I want to just contribute that we somehow have to analyze this Israeli-Palestinian issue with a God complex reference to Israel and everything that they do. And we know what it leads to, the kind of inhumane treatment of other human beings. I can't talk long because I'm literally in the office of Congressman Deborah Ross, and I've got to make a presentation on Islamophobia in about, 1 minute. But thank you for participating. You are a walking university of Islamic history in America. And thank you again, and assalamu alaikum. And I apologize for having to leave so quickly, but I've got to go. I'm in D.C. doing some things, and you know what I'm doing. All right, that's what I'm like.
Well, the Fleming is on the job. with from Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill, and we'll bring to our audience his report on the actions and the activities of that day. But Sister Aisha, I wanted to get back to a point that you made as far as, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, the boycotting of Israeli products. Now, I guess well over maybe 15, somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago, a movement began on the college campuses called BDS, Boycott, Divest, and Sanction. And like you said, this was a movement to boycott the Israelis. It was essentially a similar tactic that was used against the South African apartheid state. And so as years went on and as this BDS movement has become more progressive and has had more success and more people were engaging in this boycott, and there was an economic impact, a measurable economic impact on Israel, then we have had special interest group like ALEC, the American Legislative Something Council, the E is escaping me right now, have influenced state legislatures to enact laws that would restrict our right as Americans boycott the state of Israel. And people in our audience have to be real clear. When we're talking about the state of Israel, we're not being, when we criticize the state of Israel, we are not being anti-Semitic. We are being anti-Zionist, and there's a difference. The Palestinians are Semitic people, and they are being oppressed by other Semitic people and some non-Semitic people. So, but anyway, getting back to my point with this BDS, I first became aware of the state legislatures that were enacting laws that were preventing people to engage in boycotting Israeli products. There was an incident in Texas where a sister was a speech pathologist, had been working in this county school district for several years. And then when, and I believe she was also a Palestinian extra. I think that her family was Palestinian. I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. But when she, so every year she has a contract that she has to renew with the school district. And when it came up, the contract now had a clause where she would not be able to engage in criticizing or boycotting the state of Israel. So the first question is, what does this have to do with her services as a speech pathologist in a school classroom? So that was the first case that I was aware of. Now, Sister Aisha, you as an editor of a newspaper, you might be aware of this case. I think it was in Missouri or Kansas, where this, you know, small independent newspaper that depends quite a bit on advertising dollars from state agencies in their newspaper. When they came time to renew a contract with the state, there was a clause in there too that they could not encourage or engage in the boycotting or criticism of Israel. So the gentleman who was the editor, when he returned the paperwork, but he didn't apparently check a box or something. He didn't check the box to agree to that. And he went along for a while. And finally, one of the state agencies, there was a diligent state worker who noticed, oh, wait a minute, this is not checked. So the the newspaper is not in compliance. And so they would withdraw state money from the different agencies because he had not complied with agreeing to limiting the coverage that his newspaper could have in terms of the boycotting, the divestment, and the sanctioning of Israel and any criticism that would appear about Israel. Now, he's taken that case all the way up to the appellate level, and I believe his next stop is the Supreme Court. Are you aware of that case? And if you are, how do you as an editor, how does that affect you with Muslim Jews?
It's the same effect as it's having on that newspaper and any other business that refuses to check that box. Putting those businesses, those publications in jeopardy of financial ruin because we can't go down the line and step with the behavior of Israel. Not only can we not go, but we can't criticize it. We can't speak out against it. We can't write against it. And now you're going to punish me financially if I don't just acquiesce and go along with it. And it baffles you to understand why. You want to understand why. But we know England and the United States and some European countries actually have what I call this guilt complex. Because during the Holocaust, they didn't do anything to stop it, even when they knew about it. And there was one scenario during that period where there was a ship of Jews that was headed to the U.S. for sanctity. They were looking for a haven here. And the United States government turned that ship around, and those people returned to places that actually led to their death. And then Churchill and the other ones decided that they're going to make amends for their shortcomings in terms of going to the aid of the Jews when they were under the Holocaust threat. So they decided to give them the territory the Palestinians occupied as a redress of their failings. And so I say the U.S. and Europe is still living under this guilt complex, but the Palestinians are the ones that are suffering from it. Yeah. I remember in the early 1990s, I remember when the press release came out that the last map, the last Atlas map, had taken off the name of the country of Palestine, had taken it off the map.
Yes.
And then when we were there, I remember Palestinians pointing out how they were changing the names on signs and street signs that normally would have a Palestinian name, how they were changing the names on those signs to Hebrew signs, or English, anything but Palestinian. And you mentioned the UN. The UN has resolutions going back to 1965 that Israel should pull its borders back to the 1965 war. That was the territory that they would allow them to keep for Israel. And the two-state solution, the rest of that territory would go to the Palestinians for a Palestinian. Israel has violated those borders over and over again to the point now that you have these right-wing Jews still building settlements and land that was designated Palestinian land just right now. They're still building settlements today with our tax money, with the money that we get. They're still building settlements on land that was supposed to be allocated as a Palestinian state. And there are several maps. You can find them online. Where it shows every 10 years the amount of Palestinian land that was taken and allocated to Israel, And now it just looks like a little blog here and there left, and they expect the Palestinians to make a state out of that. I recall when Palestinians like Leila Diab here, her relatives, they would come up and say, I still have the deeds to the house I was living in when y'all created Israel. I want my house back. They still have the deeds to the property.
Yes.
And now you have argument from the Israelis that, but we were here 400 years ago. So we came back home. I don't know where they've been the rest of that time, but that's like the Native American Indians said, we were here 200 years ago. So give us Brooklyn back.
Yeah,
give
exactly.
us the West Coast. They were here a shorter period than that. Then we should return all the property back to the Native American. The Dakota tribes, all the tribes should come claim their land because we ought to have been here 200 years. They were here first, and they want it back. That's the kind of argument that Israel has. We were here 400 years ago, so give us back what we had before. But where you been? The Palestinians did not leave. They've been there. And then they have to actually start documenting their history because, you know, they kind of contest the history of the Palestinians. But they can they can document their history now 4,000 years.
Yeah, so true. And I like that example that you gave. I think California and Texas, rather than keeping the Mexicans who were trying to come across the border seeking asylum, we better let them say, okay, this is our land. We're going to use the Israeli defense. This is our land. You were colonialists. We want our land back. But you won't see the Kevin McCarthy's of the world supporting that.
I've heard Latinos say, we didn't cross the border. Y'all moved the border.
Exactly.
we didn't cross into you. Y'all moved the border. We were here.
Exactly. Did you have any question or comment, Cheryl? Unfortunately, Dr. Bazian, Hajim Bazian, he's had technical difficulty getting into the board. He has limited access, so he might not be able, he probably won't be able to join us for the last half an hour or so. So we have enough that we can go with this. You mentioned about the UN. One big problem with the UN has so many resolutions that it has passed condemning Israel for violating international law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since 2015, the General Assembly of the UN has adopted 140 resolutions criticizing Israel, mainly over its treatment of the Palestinians, its relationships with neighboring countries, and other alleged wrongdoings. Over the same period, it has passed 68 resolutions against all other countries. So if you take all the countries that are members of the UN or countries in the world, 68 UN resolutions have been passed against them, while 140 resolutions during the same period of time by the General Assembly has been passed against Israel. And we know that the United States, our country, our leaders taking direction, our UN ambassador taking direction from our State Department and our president, the majority of the times blocks resolutions that might emanate from the Security Council. And so we have to start to put pressure on the Biden administration and our representatives that as the Israeli government, because they've stepped up. Even though it's against international law and they have had so many resolutions against them, Israel is still establishing settlements. And for people to know, when we say settlements, we mean that if I am a Jewish person living in the East Bronx and I say I want to go back home and I go back to Israel, and I say, oh, well, that little piece of land over there looks good in that territory. I think that I should build my house over there. The Israeli government has that person to resettle and take the property away from the Palestinians. Like you're saying, Sister Aisha, Mm-hmm. And so now you have someone who has come from the United States. Maybe their generations originated in Ukraine or Russia or Poland or Czechoslovakia. They may not have any traces back to ancient Jerusalem or Palestine. But the fact that this Jewish state has been established, they feel that they are entitled to take land that, like you say, Palestinians have lived on for hundreds and hundreds of years. And in what reality is that fair? In what reality is that just? That's what we have to ask ourselves.
Okay. And I also like to add, Sister Elijah, that and we're not talking about all not even all Jews. There are many Jewish organizations that protest Israelis' treatment towards Palestinians. There's a group called themselves the Reform Jews, the Tikkun Society, T-I-K-K-U-N. It should be followed and read what they say, what their rabbis say. And they call out Israel all the time on their abuse and mistreatment of Palestinians, as well as the world's sanctioning of Israel's treatment of others. You know, in psychology class, we used to talk about the abuse becoming abusive. And it would be related to that domestic violence, growing up in abusive homes, and they see their mother being beat. They said it's a great possibility that those children, some of those children, or someone in that group of siblings is going to grow up to be an abusive person, because that's what they were exposed to. Now, I know the Israelis don't want to hear it, but they are playing out the role of the abused becoming abusive.
Yeah.
And because of the abuse that they receive and their anger at the world for allowing it to happen, many of their tactics have become very abusive, so they really need to check their own psyche. And some people might ask, going back to old street slang, Sister Elijah, they'll ask you, you don't have a dog in that fight. what dog you got in this fight? Well, as Muslims, we got a dog in the fight. One, it's just wrong, and the Muslim says to the other Muslims, if you see a wrong, you should address it.
Yeah.
And if you can't address it physically, then you should speak out about it. And if you can't speak out about it because, for example, you're going to get all your financial response revenues cut off because you spoke out about it, you can even go silently and not check a box. But if you can't do that, then at least feel bad about it in your heart. And right now, Allah still gave us a voice.
Yeah.
We may not be able to physically do anything about it, but we can speak out about it. And not only that, but in terms of our Muslim African-American communities, we have relationships with Palestinians. In the Nation of Islam, we have to remember that the teacher of Imam W.D. Muhammad, the Arabic teacher, was Dr. Jamil Diab, Palestinian refugee. And it was Jamil Diab that kept steering young teenage Wallace Muhammad towards the Quranic verses and the meaning of those Quranic verses and pricking his conscience to go to the Quran to find the answers for your people's problems. That was Jamil Diab, a Palestinian refugee. And another example here in Mississippi, we have the International Museum of Muslim Cultures. One of the co-founders of the International Museum of Muslim Cultures is a Palestinian-American. The other is an African-American Muslim sister here. And that museum they have built up with international recognition. But when I came back home after being gone for 36 years, this Palestinian brother, Imad Al-Turk, was the co-founder of the museum in my community that uplifted the stories about the Muslims African Muslims among slaves who settled in Mississippi. And so eventually they invited me to be on the board for the International Museum of Muslim Culture. And in our conversations, I actually asked some of the people that were coming in, I'm sorry for my slang, but I asked some of the people, I said, well, who all got skin in the game? And the Palestinian American brother, Imad Al Turk, said, I've been living in Mississippi for 40 years, so I don't nobody have more skin in the game than I have in the game. He actually lived and worked in Mississippi longer than I have, and I was born here because I left. And he wasn't deterred. He married a European sister, and their families maintained their Islam, and he comes to the African-American community's events and puts investments into the African-American community. He's a well-established businessman, and he has befriended us as Muslim African-Americans and the total African-American community, because if you heard the news about Jackson, Mississippi, is in dire need. So the museum itself has taken on an arm that's called the Beloved City. And the Beloved City arm of the museum is to help reinvest in Jackson and upgrade the conditions wherever possible. And they're doing it one ward at a time. We got 7 wards, and they pick one ward to start with. And this is co-founded and along with the African-Americans, Imad Al Turk is right there. So they recognize when there is injustice, and they work towards remedying the injustice. And another thing, a lot of Palestinians, even in their state of being oppressed and suppressed, when George Floyd murder took place, signed on the apartheid wall that divides the Palestinians from the Israelis, from the city, this huge wall, Donald Trump wanted to build one like it, I think. They just opposed onto the wall the picture of George Floyd with the Palestinian flag in his background.
Yeah.
So oppressed people recognize oppressed people. Now, you're gonna create some anger, and some of those young Palestinians are gonna lash out, and they're gonna be violent, and you might even end up calling them a terrorist. But when you keep your foot on somebody's neck right there, and they see you keep putting their foot on their neck, they're gonna act out. And there's that old saying, "One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter."
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the founders.
I like that one. I'm going to steal that one. I ain't heard that one before.
I think it was used a lot with Nelson Mandela when they were hunting down Nelson Mandela.
I'm going to write that one down.
When they were calling Nelson Mandela a terrorist, they started saying one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm going to put that one on a shirt.
Free. And then that's with the president. Exactly. Now, there was another incident that happened. Brother Fleming and the U.S. Coalition of Muslim Organizations are having their 8th annual Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., today and tomorrow. Now, I guess it is about 6 weeks or so ago, in the Congress, Representative Rashida Tlaib, who is from Michigan, she had scheduled a conference or a ceremony of sorts, acknowledging the Nakba. And by the Nakba, we're talking about that period when Palestinians were forced to leave their property, leave Palestine, and seek asylum throughout the world. And this was, I believe, the 75th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And so Representative Khalid, she had reserved a room, you know, one of the congressional rooms that you can reserve for events. And then McCarthy canceled the reservation and the use of the room, and in, you know, posturing and trying to satisfy the big money lobbyists, AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, labeled the event, said that we cannot tolerate anti-Semitism. And this is what gets me. When you speak up for a Palestinian, you're anti-Semitic. These are Semitic people. And we're speaking up for Semitic people. We should be labeled pro-Semitic. Anyway,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe a day or so before the event was scheduled to happen. But to his credit, Senator Bernie Sanders made provisions where he got space for them on the Senate side. He was Jewish, yes. He's Jewish, and he's been criticized, too, because he has said that America needs to listen to both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Mm-hmm. And needs to be fair and just, you know, to both sides.
Yeah.
And we also have to reevaluate the financial support that we're giving to Israel for their military weapons and things. But anyway, so I thought that this incident there on Capitol Hill really highlights the skewed and the unbalanced approach that our lawmakers from the federal to the local level take as far as the issue of the Palestinians and the Israelis. And yeah. There was very, very to none coverage of this incident through the media.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Most people, when you try to get information about what's going on, you have to use alternative media sources. Muslim Journal, Democracy Now! Does a good job. Online, there is a outlet called the Electronic Intifada that has some mm-hmm. very interesting guests that make presentations on their broadcast. But I think we all have to become more engaged in educating ourselves exactly to what, like you said, what are the underlying issues? The point that you raised as far as this guilt, it seems
yeah.
that we've been put on, our leaders have had such a guilt trip about denying asylum to those who are on that ship. And we see them repeating the same thing now to many people who are seeking asylum in this country. That's a whole nother show. But as human beings, we should have, as the law created us, it gives us the image, the human being as sounding clay, meaning that we are responsive. And like you said, if we see an evil, we should do something to change it with our hands. If we can't, we've got to speak out about it. If we just have it in our hearts to realize that this is something that is hurting our heart because it is unjust. But we can't just be oblivious to what is going on, because what is going on affects us right here in our country. We can't hold America up as this shining example of democracy when we prop up governments that are anything but democratic to all of its citizens. They claim that they have to support Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East. That is a lie. Israel doesn't have a constitution, and Israel does not extend the right that it extends to Jewish citizens two Palestinians.
Palestinians have to carry ID cards.
Yes. Again, and they have the checkpoints. All of the markings on the apartheid and Human Rights Watch last year gave a scathing report of how Israel is an apartheid state, and people still want to contradict that and want to argue against that when they have all of the same markings that South African apartheid has. And besides that, they're actively engaged in the absolute genocide of Palestinian people. They want to, just like they've erased off of the map a lot in terms of Palestinian territory, they absolutely want to erase the living Palestinians there in the land. When that house was demolished, I think it was on Thursday. I think the house was demolished on Thursday in Ramallah, which is a part of the occupied West Bank. And it was, as we said earlier, a collective punishment effort, which is a war crime again. That appeared in the Democracy Now! Reporting, where this woman, Umm Islam, she said, "We as Palestinians are used to experiences like this," talking about the home demolitions. "It is not the first home they've destroyed, and it will not be the last. Their demolition activities are all about how much they hate us." So that is an abominable spirit. Although they're depressed, they've seen it, and they expect it to continue. The Palestinian people, you have to admire, much like we have been here in America, they have not given up. They are resilient people. And our leaders can respect the Ukrainians who are standing up for their territory, but we don't respect and honor the Palestinian people who are standing up for their territory.
Sister Elijah, I saw a Facebook cartoon related to the way we respond to Ukraine. This is actually a Yemen cartoon. You know, the war in Yemen with the Saudis bombing the Yemeni people and babies starving and stuff like that for, 10 years now? And nobody wants to intervene in that war. And at the same time, people point out the other people point out that Saudis are using American weaponry. You know, when the bombs explode, the shrapnel has made in USA. One of the Yemeni girls came up from under the rubble, and she wrapped herself in blue and yellow, and she stood up on top of the heap. And under the cartoon, the caption was, "Maybe they can see me now," because she had on blue and yellow, which is the colors for France. And it's not to take anything away from the Ukrainian plight and the aggression against them by Russia, but what about everybody else? Tell me it's not the color of the skin, if you can. Tell me that the blue-eyed girl's life was not more valuable than the brown-eyed Yemeni girl's life. And even in Israel, there is an element of racism that pales reason. It's pure racism. And it needs to be addressed by the folk out there who can do something, at least say something about it.
Yes.
And we see it, but nobody wants to address it.
So we have to put pressure. How, you know, the purpose of this program is to charge us all up, give us the information or direction to sources where we can become more politically and civically engaged so that we can bring about the changes that we want to see. we have to start at the local level and go to the state level, then go to the federal level. We have to be committed to do this in every walk of our lives. And when we see these types of injustices happening, stand up for what we know that is right.
And don't let the media and don't let the people demonize Palestinians just because they're Palestinians, just like they demonize us, you know, and just like Donald Trump demonized Latinos who were seeking refuge and calling them rapists and murderers.
Yes, yes.
You know, don't allow people who want to take your resources to demonize you, because that's what they do first before they can legitimize their treatment of you. And it's happening.
Yes.
It happened to us, and it's happening to the Palestinians.
Yes, definitely. And as you said, because of that guilt from what happened in World War II, since 1948 until about 2016, the U.S. had given Israel $150 billion in aid. $150 billion in aid. Then in 2016, Obama administration signed a 10-year military aid deal that included $33 billion in foreign military financing grants. So another $33 billion plus, and $5 billion in missile defense funds, that Iron Dome that they talk about, the one where they combat all of the missiles that may come in from Palestine, and maybe they'll get one settler killed, and they'll go in and kill 50 Palestinians, that missile defense fund. So we're looking at $38 billion from 2016 to 2026. So we got three more years of that agreement in play, and you'll get that $3.8 billion over the next 3 years that will be going to Israeli military and defense. And we have to realize that Israel doesn't have the unemployment problem that we have here in America. Israel doesn't have the homeless problem that we have here in America. Israel doesn't have the
healthcare issues
that we have here in America. So we got to ask ourselves, why are we giving this $3.8 billion a year to Israel? If our elected officials could just answer that one question, that would be miraculous, because there's no justification for it. There doesn't seem to be any justification for it. If we talk about, well, for their defense, they're there in the Middle East and they are a strategic ally. That's the line that they give you. Against who? The U.S. already.
Well,
has
let's take a quick break, our last quick break, but then I do want us to come back and answer that question. But also, before we leave, I'd like to see if we can ponder this question, one that I've had for a long time, and I don't think anybody has answered successfully. What do we do? What do we do? Where do we go from here? What's the solution? And I know no one really knows the answer to that, but it's fun to contemplate. So let's take a quick break real quick and come back and answer that.
Sounds good.
Join us every Monday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time for an episode of Optimal Health with your host, Abdul Shaheed, your certified symptometry health coach and doctoral student at the American School of Symptometry. It is our aim and objective every week on am360.org to enlighten health-conscious individuals on root cause therapeutics and provide them with guidance on general wellness and cell nourishment. Planet Earth is well known in symptometry as an echo chamber of illusion and a testing ground with booby traps everywhere. Come join us each week to learn about these booby traps that cause health to be denied. Connect at am360.org and 24-hour streaming at 701-719-4197. Call in to listen to speak to the host at 515-605-9891 or 425-292-4253. Share comments at info@cwsc.us. Tweet us at CWShura. Email us at info@cwsc.us. Visit our parent corporation, Community Wide Shura's Conference, at cwsc.us or leave a listener comment at 910-317-0297. You are listening to AM360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
All right, you're back live with Sister Amatullah Elijah Sabri and Cheryl Sutter. Sister, you're back on the air. Sister,
Aisha, okay, you asked the question about what can we do, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
I have maybe a few things, but Sister Aisha, do you have any suggestions?
I think we have to be proactive, as Brother Fleming Alamein is with the Coalition, American Coalition for Good Government. We have to be proactive in our political sphere. We can't sit on the sideline and say that's somebody else's problem, because, you know, we had the phrase remake the world, and we can't remake the world from the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
we have to get into the fray. And I know a lot of people say, that's none of your business. Yes, it is. The condition of the planet is our business. And we sit
yeah.
back and wait for other people to do it. They would do it to their benefit, and they would not only cut us out, but all marginalized people. And our responsibility to our Creator is to speak
yeah.
the truth and work towards the truth and work towards the betterment of humanity. And to see suffering people, marginalized people, maligned people who are lied upon and the property taken from them, just like it has happened to us. They even took our physical bodies as property. If we sit back and do that, then all of our suffering has been in vain, because we didn't learn anything. We didn't gain
yeah.
anything. We didn't grow in our own humanity. Whatever the reason that we come through all the suffering that we did, if it wasn't to confront suffering when we see it.
Yeah.
There's the justification. You've been conditioned to confront such suffering when you see it. That's why you went through your turmoil, and that should be the outcome. And the other thing is just to be news savvy. And don't assume that everything that you hear about a certain people is the fact about the matter. And when they cut the news short on when they say something about Palestinians and the Palestinians say, yeah, but all of a sudden the screen goes to something else. Call the media out. And yeah. People like Rashida Tlaib in Congress, don't assume that she's a radical that can't have a straight methodical thought. Don't turn away from her and they make her look, you know, confused or whatever. They'll start calling her a terrorist in Congress, as they have.
Yeah.
If we see her being marginalized and she's standing out there all by herself, somebody should go stand with her. Just stand by her side. You don't have to do anything. Just stand with her. No, and not let people just run over other people and we all just gullible about it. We can change our attitudes if we can't do anything else. And we always got something to say about the way we spend our money. We can still confront our government on where they allocate money.
Yeah.
And we can't get clean water in Jackson, Mississippi, but we can build settlements in Israel.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're trying to make it crazy. Excellent. The point about the money, I say support the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, the BDS movement. We can do that. Look at, read your labels. When you see a product, when you go into a market, if it says made in Israel or imported from Israel, put it back on the shelf. Hit them in the pocketbook. That is one thing that has proven to be successful. And then also check on your local level. Do your state agencies have those lines in it that prohibits an individual contractor from supporting the BDS movement or from our freedom of speech, that if you criticize the state of Israel, then you can't get a state contract or you can't get a local county contract. Check and see if your local area has those kinds of draconian provisions in the contracts that they are offering to vendors. Those are two things, and I love what Sister Aisha said as far as stand with representatives like Rashida Tlaib. Make contributions to the campaigns for those who share our interests as far as supporting the Palestinian people. Those are a few of the things that we can do. Support organizations that are doing good work with offering aid for the Palestinian people. Because like Sister Aisha, she started off, we saw on TV, they just bombed the building that supported the media that was over there and claimed that terrorists also had offices in the building. So what do? They leveled the building. So we should support those media outlets like Muslim Journal and other Democracy Now! And Electronic Intifada, the other media organizations that get the word out to us as far as what's going on in Israel. And organizations that, you know, there are an organization called Jews for Peace, and also the Tikkun movement that Sister Aisha referenced. We can support those organizations that are offering relief and doing good in the areas of the occupied territories. We can make contributions to Human Rights Watch and organizations that keep us apprised of what's going on. So those are just some of the solutions that off the top of my head I would offer. I'm so sorry that Brother Hatem was not able to be with us. But inshallah, we're going to get him on soon. We'll get him and Sister Aisha on the program again soon. He has definitely been a friend to the community of Imam W.D. Muhammad here in the Bay Area and throughout the country. He has been an activist. So another thing is support those academic professors who come under scrutiny and criticism because they stand up for truth. We need to do that. Don't let them drum people out and off of the college campuses because they're standing up for truth. So that's another thing that we can do, especially if it's a public institution. We need to stand up for those who are standing up for truth. Those are some solutions. I don't know, was that enough of a start for you, Sister Cheryl?
Yes, ma'am. There's one that is glaringly missing for me as a elected official. I'd like to see more of us. I'd like to see more Muslims running for office. You did say support those in office, but I'd like to see more Muslim candidates actually running for office so that we have more people to support. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more people getting involved on the local, state, federal level. So they I think it was a conversation we had yesterday. You know, there's one thing to presuppose about what can happen is another thing to put people in positions of power and influence to make things happen.
And so
Sister Rashida is not there by herself.
Right.
You know,
okay,
we host fundraisers for her. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, give maybe two or three suggestions for okay, I'm in Jackson, Mississippi. I am Kansas City, Kansas. How can I become more politically active or encourage Muslims to, I'm in Jacksonville, Florida, to become politically engaged to run for office?
Two things. Number one, passionate about. Number one, if you're passionate about education, school board. Not everybody can be on the city council. So we'll need 500 people running for one seat on the city council. But if your city council has a seat available, by all means, run for it. City council, your board of supervisors, some call it township supervisor or something like that. If that's available to you, run for it. But not everybody is cut out for that. There's commissions. There's, there's water boards. Jackson, Mississippi, you don't have clean water, run for the water board. What we find is the people who are in charge, I sit on the water board, but I'm also a scientist. But we find that, and most of the time I walk into buildings, I'm the only one who looks like me. And a lot of times we find that the people who are in charge of not making sure you have clean, fresh water in your community don't even look like you, and they don't live in your community. So if you're upset that you don't have clean, fresh water and clean, fresh sewer systems, don't just sit there and complain about it. Make a difference. Go run for it. Make sure you don't have the cancer alley like we have in New Orleans. If you're upset that your children aren't getting the education that you think they're supposed to have, it's not feasible to start a school in every community. Get on the school board. Get on the school site council. If you don't want to run for the school board, you don't have the time for the full school board. School site council is where all the money decisions are made. Get on the PTA. If you go to your state school meetings, in California, it's the state school superintendent, but every state has one. They have one on the local level, they have one on the regional level, and they have one on the state level. And that makes decisions about what the curriculum is that your students are learning. If you are upset about environmental, every state has a regional and a state environmental committee. Get on there. Listen to them. Listen to your EPA meetings in your regional and your state area. Call in. Make public comment at your city council meetings, at your regional meetings, at your state meetings. And it doesn't have to be even a partisan or a religious comment. It just has to be something that you're passionate about. Get appointed to a commission. We have women's commissions. We have commissions on girls and women. We have commissions on environment. We have commissions on sustainability. We have commissions on planning. If you don't want buildings built on top of each other, go talk about it.
If you're upset about the rent is too daggone high in your area, then go and talk about it. If you're upset because you don't have enough housing and you see people sleeping on the street, don't just sit there and complain to your neighbor. Go talk about it. You don't take your car to the plumber to get fixed. You take your car to the mechanic. So why are you to your neighbor who don't know anything about mechanics instead of going and talking to the people who can do something about it? So either jump in the race, support people who are already doing the work, or if you don't like it, go do it yourself. But there's a thing that says either complain, fix it, or be silent. So we can't sit here and be upset about it if we don't want to roll up our sleeves and do the work. We can pray all we want to, but if we're not willing to move aside and let God do his work or use us to do the work, then we don't have any right to be complaining. That's what I say.
Yes. I would just like to add, at the very bare minimum, get up and vote.
Yeah.
And at the very bare minimum, know who you're voting for. Read a flyer. Yeah. Look up their name. See what
they've done.
Are they for you? Don't just put crazy folk in office.
And read the Muslim Journal when they tell you. Read the Muslim Journal when they tell you who, when they do the analysis of the people running for office. Read it.
Crazy.
There
talk.
We go.
Yes, ma'am.
Read it. You know, there's some work behind that. There's some work behind that journalism. Read it.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Read it.
And that's where I was they keep asking us, where are the dumb folks? What if they're in the masses? They should be in Congress. You know, be a John Lewis. You know, John Lewis. John Lewis started his activism when he was 24 years old. He pulled up a chair at the table with Dr. King, and they accepted him. They didn't shun him away because he was young. And, you know, when he died, his comment to us, his marching orders to us, he said, go get in good trouble. And get in good trouble. You know. So for our young people, the goal may not be to be an imam and the master to lead prayer. Your goal should be out there to remake the world.
Yeah.
So you got the energy, you got the knowledge base, you've been to school. Go get into the fray where to make a difference in our lives. And we can't just chase money. That's good, too, because you give the cost. But sometimes you have to turn down a lucrative job to do a more meaningful job. So our young people should be looking at what's needed. That's where we want them to place themselves. It's okay if you imam and practice. That's good, too. But that shouldn't be your end goal, you know?
Right. And we need the support. We need the support. I love that.
Yes. And help out Muslim Journal, get your subscription, get an extra copy, send to your local library, so that we have a free press, we have an excellent vehicle in Muslim Journal, and we have to get our voices out there, inshallah.
And it is a 60-year-old effort. The successor of Muhammad's Feast that was started by Malcolm in 1961 on behalf of the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But we have a 60-year track record, and it's a legacy that we now need people to step up. You know, we're in our succession mode.
Yeah.
We're ready for the new talent to step up, the new energy, the freshness. Nothing is holding you back.
And in July, I think it's July 23rd, we're going to have Sasaisha back, inshallah, and we'll continue discussion on the Muslim Journal and what is the role of the media in society. Thank you. Thank you, Sister Cheryl.
Thank you. And with that, we thank you all for listening, and we wish you a wonderful, wonderful Monday and a great week. We will see you next week with another episode. Remember, life is all about perspective. Change how you look at things, and the things you look at will also change.
Stay focused, stay engaged, stay learning, and we will see you next week, inshallah. Have a wonderful week. Stay powerful, stay purposeful, stay prayerful, stay politically engaged, and participate civically. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.